For those of you who have summer birthdays, you might remember being in camp, away from your family. So this is like the biggest happy birthday I've ever had, I think. Anyway, okay, our topic for today, I must say that when I was told that this is the week of back, I said, oh boy, what am I going to think about the week of back? So I started thinking through different material, and I came up with something which is maybe moving away from the conventional connotation of the word back, but a specific mitzvah, which we don't talk about so much, which is called Noseh Ba'ol in Chaveru, carrying another person's burden on your back. And let's understand this mitzvah. Okay, the Gemara in Yevamot tells us that Jews are Baishanim, Rachmanim, Gomle Chassadim. Jews have three inherent mitzvot. They're compassionate, they are Baishanim, meaning they have basic modesty, the Gomle Chassadim, and they're kind. One of the problems that we have is that we don't always see this mitzvah in all Jews. And the question is, why not? One of the explanations you give is that that is a core genetic composition of a person. And yet, life experiences harden us and cover us up with layers. So it could be that deep inside you, you are actually a compassionate person. But being into yourself and being into life makes you hardened. Then we hear bad news sometimes. Should I shut this off? Is this bothering anybody? What happens is that sometimes we don't seem so compassionate, but then we hear some terrible news, and all of a sudden we find ourselves crying and thinking about somebody and praying for them. And what happened was the knife of the bad experience, of the bad news, cut through the layers of my apathy and brought out that internal compassion that was always there all along. Some people are more naturally compassionate. Some people need to hear something really bad in order to get them to be moved. The Maharal teaches us that every mitzvah has what's called chomer and surah. Chomer is the God-given amount that a person has from birth of a certain characteristic. And surah is the way I work on myself, even if I don't have someone to give naturally. Now, if you watch young children, some of them are naturally compassionate. They hear somebody cry. In fact, there was a study that was done at Columbia University that proved that compassion is an inherent trait that babies have when they're 1 day old, 1 hour old. Because in the study, they put a crying baby next to a baby that was calm. And over time, the calm baby started crying as well. So you think that that would come from the noise. But then when they put all kinds of other noises, like a fire engine or an ambulance, the baby comes. So you can't exactly interview a one-day-old baby. But the theory has it is that the crying comes from compassion for another human being. And that's there at birth. Different stages were discovered that babies at around 6 months old, when they hear another baby crying, they comfort themselves. They take their own pacifier or their own bottle, because they don't really have any distinction between their pain and others, so they comfort themselves. A few months later, babies learn how to reach out to others. And this is a laboratory that was done at Columbia University, and they found that around a year, a baby would extend his own bottle or his own pacifier to another crying baby. Later, a few months after that, babies develop the ability to understand how to treat another person in distress. And they found that after being in this baby laboratory for a while, they knew, when that baby cries, he needs to stay so long. This baby, when he cries, go everyone. What's interesting is that we grow up, and we lose some of these skills. I often say to girls, when you're in a counseling, you walk into a room, and there's a girl sitting there by herself. We often don't know what to do. If she may be a little lonely, and she wants me to sit on her bed and talk to her. Or maybe she's finally looking for some space to be by herself, and I just interrupted her time by herself, and I should do it. most of us do not know what to do. Because over time, we lose the knack to naturally understand people and what they need. So my topic for today is an extension of the meter called rachamim. Rachamim means compassion. Rachamim is an emotional response to somebody else's situation. It's involuntary. When you hear bad news and you start crying, or you just want to daven for somebody, or you want to help somebody, very often, it's just triggered, and you don't know when it's going to be triggered. So we call this mita of rachamim, compassion. We call it a discriminate mita. What do I mean discriminate? If I would ask you, are you a compassionate, caring person? You'd probably say to me, oh yes. Because you remember sometime that you heard some bad news and you really felt like you really wanted to do something about it. But I will challenge you and tell you that you're not always compassionate. A discriminate mita means that sometimes my compassion is provoked and sometimes it isn't. Could be that some girl can come over to you and say, you've got a headache, and I feel really dehydrated. And for that girl, you're like, oh my gosh, how can I help you? Can I get you a drink or rest? And you're concerned about her. A few hours later, you say, oh, you're okay. Another girl comes over to you and says, I have such a headache. You might be nice if you won't say it, but maybe thinking, stop complaining all the time. Same situation. But in one situation, it evokes compassion. And the other situation, it didn't. Because honestly, certain people bring out our compassion more than others. And that's what I mean when I say that it's a discriminant meter. You don't feel it for everybody. You hear somebody's story and really thinking about it. Somebody else's? No big deal. It's also a discriminant meter because certain topics move us more than others. Could be that if you hear about a chayal who gets killed at the front somewhere, you are very, very moved. But when you hear about somebody else who got killed in a different circumstance, maybe it doesn't move you so much. Because, like I said, some things move us and some things don't. A certain mother once said to me, she had two kids pretty close in age. And she said, you know, I have one child who, if he's been coming from the park crying, Mommy, somebody pushed me. She, like, naturally stops whatever she's doing, and she runs over to him. Tell me what happened. I feel so bad. Come get a hug. She said, my next child, come in. Mommy, somebody pushed me. Same exact scenario. And she's thinking, someone can be in. I need to make dinner. Because some people, even within a family, sometimes some people evoke our natural compassion more than others. Topics. I always say, topic of bullying. If a kid in my family, one of my kids tells me that he's being bullied in school, that something's bothering him, I am with him in 1 second to keep in touch. But if a child tells me that he's bored, I don't have any compassion for bored. Get a life. Read a book. Want to kiss a kid? You want to do something? Because I'm not bored. I'm busy. So I don't have compassion for boredom. Maybe bullying triggers something in me, and therefore I'm more compassionate if somebody's doing good. So we all have our people who bring out more rachamim, and we have our topics that bring out more rachamim. And now I'm going to get to our topic for today. What happens when you don't have rachamim for some topic? And what do you do about that? Because we don't want to just feel for the people we feel for and not feel for everybody else. So the mita that supplements rachamim is called nosa ba'olim chaver, which means to carry the burden of another person on your back. And that's the best. Let's understand this. If rachamim is an emotional response, I feel so bad for you. Nosa ba'ol is a cognitive mita. It means that where I don't feel compassion emotionally, I try to understand your experience so that I can relate to you better. And nosa ba'olam chavero, take it literally, and a lot of the Bali Musa do, they say, if you see somebody who's riding on a horse or a donkey and it's like laden with bags, and the rider is like hitting the horse so the donkey can go faster. If he would take the bands off of the horse and put it on his own back for a second, he wouldn't be hitting so hard. That's what most of the old means. If I can take your situation and wear it on my back, I would be more compassionate. So the good news is that even though compassion, rachamim, is a discriminate mitzvah, which I can't control, that certain people just get my sympathy more than others, I can supplement this mitzvah, and I could use the mitzvah of no sibba'ot, carrying your burden on my back, to help me feel for you and understand you, even when it doesn't come naturally. Let's understand how this works. The mitzvah of no sibba'ot and chavero is not an emotional mitzvah. It's the lashon of the Saba Mikel, who's the head of the Kel Yeshiva, who was a very insightful person who worked on understanding the mitzvah very well. He called it Amal HaSechel HaTzior, the work of the intelligence and the imagination. I don't naturally feel for you, so I'm going to think about the situation and imagine it in order to feel for you better. And this is how it starts. It starts in the brain. Sometimes you might think that, okay, so I don't feel for it, I'm going to think about it. The bottom line is that sometimes the result of no sibba'ot is even better than the result of rachamim. Let's explain why. Rachamim is l'hashkit hatzar ha'atzmi miserel zulato. This is the lashon of the Saba Mikel. A lot of times, compassion is my need to comfort myself because of your pain. If we all have this, when we hear about a tragedy, we want to do something. So we start dying, and we give stuff up, and we bake cakes, and we send things to people. If you analyze it, sometimes it's my need to assuage my discomfort about your situation. That's rachamim. A woman I know was going through something very difficult recently, and she said that somebody met her in a public place, said, honey, I heard about your situation. I just need to give you a hug. And she gave her a big hug in the middle of the floor and started crying. She would have taken 1 second to think about the person that she felt bad for. The last thing in the world that this woman wanted was somebody to hug her in the middle of the floor and start crying. But listen even to the word, I need to give you a hug. It's not that you need a hug. It's that I need to give you a hug. Meaning I need to assuage my discomfort about your situation. And sometimes that's what rachamim does. It's me thinking about how to deal with you from my perspective. No sibba'ot chavero is that I'm going to think carefully about what you need, and I'm going to respond to you in a way that works for you. And that's why this mitzvah, in a sense, is even a higher mitzvah than rachamim. Because people do strange things sometimes when they feel bad for people. And not only the things that you do, or the things that the person really wants. But when you're noticed about all, you think carefully about what the person wants, and you try hard to do what they need. Another example of noticed about all is that the people who fill in and come, rise to the task in difficult situations, are often people who have to use their sechel more than their emotion. I'll give you an example. If you know anybody who volunteers for Hatzalah or Magen-Dudun, if you're the kind of person who's going to break down crying every time you come and find somebody who's a victim of an accident or something, then you will not be able to resuscitate the person and help them. And listen to the lashon. The person who has too much rachamim, too much compassion, lo yuchal lishmoa tzar zulato, v'tov lo ki lo yishma. You will not be able to hear or see people suffering because it's too much for him. Did you ever hear about somebody who said, don't tell me in the morning if I can't hear it anymore? A lot of times that heads of chesed organizations and the people who do things to people are people who don't fall apart when they see people suffering, because they have to rise up. So rachamim is a beautiful mitzvah. except that sometimes it can come in overdoses that actually makes me not so helpful anymore to the person I'm talking to. I want to give you a very interesting example of this. I once went on vacation with my husband, and I went swimming, and I came out of the pool, and I got dressed, and I was walking back to my room, and there was like a kiddie pool, maybe like the distance of the back door over here. So I'm walking past this kiddie pool, and I can see from far that there's a few mothers sitting there with toddlers. All of a sudden, I see this adorable little toddler in a pink and purple bathing suit, and I see her flip over and her head go under the water. My natural instinct was to run. But then I said to myself, one second, her mother's sitting right there. I'm far away, her mother's right there. So I stopped, waiting to watch her mother pull her out of the water. Her mother was sitting right there. The mother was so overwhelmed with the situation that she started screaming, "Get the lifeguard! Get the lifeguard!" She's sitting right here, probably right in front of her. And she's saying, "Get the lifeguard!" The grandmother was also there. And she starts screaming, "Call your own! Get your own!" I don't know who your own is, but get your own! And all of a sudden I realized that nobody is taking this kid out of the water. So I ran, fully dressed, jumped into the kiddie pool, picked up this baby, and handed her to her mother who was sitting right there. I walked back to my hotel room, and my husband said, "What happened? You regretted like getting out of the pool? You just jumped back in? Like, what happened?" And I said to him, "No, it was fascinating what just happened. These people were so so overwhelmed because they knew the child, and they were so moved emotionally by what was happening that they weren't using their brain. Because I saw the child, but I didn't know the child, I said to myself, somebody's got to get her out of the water, and they can't wait for the lifeguard to come." But sometimes when you're too emotionally involved, you don't always think about the right way to handle the situation. And sometimes a little bit of distance is what enables you to do it. So when I feel compassion, I have to realize that rachamim, where rachamim stops is where yod tzibaol starts, meaning, we said before, since rachamim is a discriminate mida, when I don't feel rachamim for you, I have to pull out this mida called yod tzibaol. But I would also like to say that sometimes I have to use yod tzibaol on top of rachamim. Meaning, I'm very compassionate towards you, and I feel a lot for you, but I better use my brain to think about what I should be doing for you. And that's the mida of yod tzibaol. It's carrying another person's burden on your back, in order to understand them and understand their needs. And that is the symptom. Okay, I'll go a little further. And I would like to say that sometimes what happens in this meetup is that people who have a lot of compassion are often thinking short term and not long term. Let's explain this. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Pufkimo. The pasuk says, that we're asking Hashem to have compassion on us, like a father has compassion on a son. Now that's interesting, because if you think about who's the more compassionate of the two parents, you usually think of a woman as being more compassionate than a man. And yet the pasuk is saying that we want Hashem to have the rachamim that a father has on a son. So what's the difference? So, Sabo Kel says about this, something very interesting. Ha'ein mirachemet al bina l'gifo v'lo l'nafsho. The nature of a woman is to have compassion for a person's body and not for their soul. What does that mean? If I'm watching my little boy get dressed, and he's fumbling and he can't close the buttons to his shirt, and I'm watching for like 20 seconds, for like 2 hours, finally, I said, "I'm coming, let me do it for you." That was compassion on his body. I mean, I don't want you to be uncomfortable. I don't want you to have to try too hard. But what would have been better? To button the shirt for him, or to let him fumble a little bit and button it himself? If I let him button it himself, I built the self-esteem that he can actually button his own body. If I button the shirt for him, I take him out of his temporary distress. But that's for rachamim on the guf, on the body. It's not rachamim on the soul. If you're ever having a hard time in school, and your mother says, "So you know what? Just stay home. You don't have to go to school anymore. Too hard for you." We all would love to hear that, right? But that isn't necessarily what's good for the person long term. And Rachim Av Rabbanim, at least stereotypically, men can see the bigger picture more than women can. A woman might do something very compassionate right now to get the kid out of his distress, but it won't be good for him in the long run. When I teach this to ladies, they often think that they're the man in their house. Like their husbands are the ones who say, oh, just give it to her, just give it to her, it feels so bad for her. She's like, no, she has to learn. So sometimes the woman plays the man part in the right place. But notice the Baal is thinking about what's good for you in the long run, not only what's good for you now. I'll give you an example. There's a very, very old book, which was probably written before I was born, called Dibs in Search of Self. Book by Virginia Axelrod. This book is about, it's a very sad book actually, it's about a child who goes to therapy, play therapy, and the assumption is that the child is probably autistic, or definitely at least has selective mutism, can't talk. So the therapist who takes the child into therapy realizes quickly that this child is brilliant. His problem is that he's incredibly emotionally abused and like terribly neglected, and therefore I don't mind yelling. What's that? So should I yell? I don't mind. Can you hear me if I talk really loud? Okay, good. So what this therapist realizes quick into therapy is that this child is completely normal, but he's very, very emotionally neglected. Terrible. So at the end of the sessions, where she would give him attention and make him feel good, and it was such a good environment for him, at the end of the session, he would beg her not to have to leave and go home. And she talks about her struggles because she's dying to just take him and say, you don't ever have to go anywhere, I'll take care of you. Don't go back to them. But she realizes that she has to teach him to be able to live and to be able to function, because just by taking him over is not the solution. Eventually the therapy will end and he's going to be dropped by her. What's he going to have? But the beautiful end of the book is that this child was incredibly, incredibly special, and he teaches his children, his parents, to be caring people. He reaches out to them and he hugs them and he teaches them to communicate, because they themselves were very, very neglected people. But what you see in the story is the temptation to not make the child leave at the end of the therapy session. That would have been rocking him on the book, meaning on the now, I feel so bad for you. Notice the Baal is, am I going to be doing you a favor, or am I going to be hurting you in the long run? Because sometimes the things that we do that feel compassionate, when someone says to you, can you do the homework for me? Can you just write this for me? You might be doing them a favor now, but in the long run, maybe you could say, do you want me to explain the material to you? I'll teach it to you. I'll help you. There's so many things that we do out of immediate needs for compassion. But in the long run, it's not good for the person. So notice the Baal means that I have the bigger picture. I think about what's good for you, not just right now, my immediate emotion, but I think about what's good for you in the long run. And this becomes a very, very important mitzvah. The reason why it's so important is because you will run into many people in the world who you do not naturally feel compassion for them. Maybe you don't have chemistry with them. Maybe there's something about them that you find annoying. And when you say that you're a compassionate person, it's because you're thinking of yourself when your rachamim was evoked. I took out my sitter, I started doing chesed, I did anything for this person, I helped them. Those were the people who naturally evoked your rachamim. But what about the girl in your class who's also going through a hard time, but you just don't feel for her? Here we need to use the midah of noseh ba'ol u'chavero, of using my brain to think about your situation and to understand you better, even though it's not coming from my heart, it's coming from my brain. brain, but that's what we do when it's not naturally evoked. If you remember in the beginning, I said to you that I have compassion for people who are being bullied, but I have no compassion for people who are bored. So at a certain point, I said to myself, you know what? If some of my children are bored, I need to understand what boredom feels like. So what does it mean to carry the other person's burden on my back? I'm not a bored person. I'm very busy. So I said to myself, what does a person who's bored feel like? And again, my emotion is not triggered. I'm thinking about it. Well, it must be that bored people feel that every minute feels like an hour. So when do I ever feel that? When I'm put on hold, when I call some kind of service or something, and they say, just 1 second, please, and then they keep me on hold for 45 minutes, every minute feels like an hour. I said, oh, that's what bored people must feel like. Every minute feels like an hour. Then I think about it a little bit more, and I say, you know, because I'm an active person, to me the world feels very bright, brightly lit. Bored people, I probably feel like I'm walking around in a gray, dull world. And another thing that bored people have is that they have time to worry about things and to think bad thoughts. My husband's grandmother, who lived to be over 100 years old, was very, very busy. She was an Auschwitz survivor, and her whole life she was rebuilding her life. And then she got older, and she retired, and she lived in Florida with a lot of older people. And she said to me once, you know what we do? We have too much time on our hands. We sit there, and we collect all the injustices. You know, we gave David such a nice present, and he never called to say thank you. What was the last time Stephen called us? She said, I had no time for this when I was busy in my life. It's just because I'm old and retired and bored that I have time to think about all the injustices and all the problems. So when I put together these three factors, I suddenly had a picture of what it might feel like to be bored. Every minute feels like an hour. You're in a gray world and you're worried about problems. And you think about problems and you think about bad things. For the first time in my life, I felt compassion for bored people. Because I didn't feel rachamim, I don't relate, but I could be no sibba'ol. Now I'd like to share with you an interesting story. Very often when we think about big talmidei chachamim who have brilliant minds, we think about people who don't have time so much to notice the needs of other people. But a real talmid chacham uses his intelligence to understand other people. Because one of the ways you could be noticed to Baal is if you have the ability to think in an abstract way. Why? Rachamim comes from, you're my type, I understand what you're going through, because I can relate to you. But what if somebody's not your type, and they're going through something difficult that you've never experienced? You need to be an abstract thinker to be able to think, what does it feel like to be that? So some big talmidei chachamim who are abstract thinkers can access this midah easily because of their ability to think abstractly. So I was reading a biography of a certain big gadol by the name of Rav Avraham Gadol, and there were three very funny stories that were told about him, where in all three cases he used the midah of noseh ba'ol. So he lived in a certain city where people's houses were very close to each other. And he was seen one day reaching out of his window, reaching into the window of a different house, singing a lullaby to a baby, a next-door neighbor's baby who was crying. And the person who saw it on the street said it was the funniest sight, like somebody's whole body was out of his house into his window. What happened? A baby was crying in the next building. So instead of being annoyed by the cry of a baby, he started saying, clearly nobody's calming this baby down. Babies like music. They like lullabies. So instead of being annoyed, I'm going to reach into the baby's window and I'll sing to the baby. That's only the first story. The second story about him, and you can imagine, he was a big Rosh Hashiva from Bnei Brak. So he had the long black coat and, you know, the whole look of like that Rosh Hashiva kind of look. He was seen on a Chol HaMoed in the zoo in Yerushalayim carrying an Arab boy on his head. with his, the Arab boy had his feet on his head. What was the story? He sees a little Arab boy crying. He doesn't speak Arabic. The boy doesn't speak Hebrew. But he could tell that the three-year-old who was crying was probably crying because he couldn't find his parents. He also realized that since he couldn't communicate with him, this kid is looking at leg because he's this high. At this height, everybody's legs look just basically the same. He's never going to find his parents in the zoo at this level. So this B'nai Brak rabbi takes an Arab child and puts him on his head so that the child can have a view of the whole area and spot his parents. What we learn from this is that to be noticeable with somebody else, I don't have to have the same ideology as you. I can understand your experience even if you're different than me. Now, I wouldn't say that if the person was a murderer, he would have to use noticeable. But a crying child is a crying child, and I need to think about why he's crying. The third example, I think, is the funniest. He walked in the old city to give a shiur in a certain yeshiva in the old city. And again, he was a B'nai Brak rabbi with a hat and a long black coat. And he's wearing a designer shirt with a lot of colors, like a really funky shirt, two sizes too small on him, under his black Rosh Hashiva coat. What was the story? He was sitting on a bus going to the old city. And the young guy in front of him, a really cool dressed young guy, much skinnier than him and much more fashionable than him, was saying, oh, I haven't been to the kotel in a long time. And I forgot that the halacha has it that when you come to the kotel, you have to rip your shirt. And he was just saying this to his friend. So the Rosh Hashiva taps him on the shoulder and says to him, by the way, there's a halacha that says that if you're not wearing your own shirt, then you don't have to rip it. So let's switch shirts. You'll go to the kotel in Davin with my Rosh Hashiva shirt. I'll take your cool, funky shirt, and we'll switch back in 2 hours. You won't have to ruin your shirt. So the rabbi comes into a yeshiva to give a shiur, wearing a long black coat with this funky colored shirt under it, two sizes too small, to do somebody else a favor. But what does this favor require? It requires no sin but all pervading. I have to put your situation on my back. This Rosh Hashiva didn't understand anything about style, but he knew enough to know that that guy probably paid a lot of money for that shirt, and he was probably upset about having to rip it. And that was enough for him to tap a stranger on the shoulder and say, here, let's switch shirts. Because often we do chesed with people when we understand them, and they're our type. I know what you're going through, let me help you. No siva'ol is even when you're not my type, I can put your burden on my back, and I can think about what it feels like to be you, and then I can be more compassionate. And that's the smida. It goes everywhere. The Saba of Kelm himself always thought of people and what they were going through. Kelm is a city in Europe. When the Saba of Kelm would hear about a non-Jew who died, he would stop and contemplate, what does it feel like to be in the afterworld and understand that you were worshiping the wrong God? That's the level of it with noticeable. He would think about a not alive non-Jew and feel for what it feels like to say, wow, the Jewish God is the right God and I've been doing the wrong thing for 80 years. That's how much Noseb Oli had. That anybody's situation he would put on his back and feel like what it felt like to be him. The reason why I'm sharing this with you is because this is such an important Misa. You're going to run into a lot of people in life who are not your type and the things that concern them don't concern you. And we don't want to be only compassionate to the people who we understand. And that's the problem with Rachamim. It's discriminate, as I said. It discriminates. There are some people who I feel for and some people who I don't. There are some topics who I feel for and some topics that I don't. And that's why the remedy is no sin for all chavira. If I don't feel for you, I could at least use my brain and put your burden on my back and feel like what it feels like to be you. I want to share a nice story about this. When I was newly married, was living in an apartment in Jerusalem with the next door neighbor who had a bunch of little children. After I had been living in the building for around a year, I walked in one day, and it was a winter day, and I noticed that outside her front door, she had all of her children's shoes lined up, like the bigger kids and the littler and the littler, and it was adorable to watch like the different pairs of shoes. I said to her, "Natalia, that's adorable, all those little shoes." I said, "It's interesting, I've been living in this building for over a year, and I never noticed you do that before. This is the first time I saw your kids' shoes lined up on the door." And she was a knee freak. She didn't like the street mud in the house. I said, "How come I never noticed that before?" She said to me, "You didn't notice it before because I've never done it before." Do you know why? There's a woman who lives in this building who's been struggling with infertility for a few years. She just had a baby this morning. She said, "All those years, I didn't have the heart, because I was imagining what it's like if you're struggling with infertility to look at beautiful little shoes lined up. Why should she have to walk by my door and feel a twinge in her heart? So I never put my children's shoes out the door, even though I like to not have them on in. Now that she gave birth today, I can put my shoes out." That's what Nosi Ba'olam Chaveiro means. This woman had a lot of kids. She didn't know what it means to struggle with infertility, but she knew enough to put the burden on her back and understand that it must be hard to see adorable little shoes if you don't have children. And that's what Nosi Ba'olam means. I put myself in your shoes, figuratively, enough to understand you, to know what might be difficult for you. What it means for you guys is, don't talk about sensitive topics in front of somebody who maybe doesn't have something that you have. If somebody has a certain difficulty, try to imagine what it feels like for them if you're talking a certain way in front of them. My daughter goes to a school, which is a very interesting school socioeconomically. There's two neighborhoods in Jerusalem that border on each other. One of them has like very, very, very wealthy families, and the other one is the poorest district of all of Jerusalem. And these kids go to school together. When my daughter was young, she liked getting all these things, you know, from America, that, you know, and enjoying all her things. After a while, I started noticing that she said, "Mommy, I'm not wearing that to school, because there are other kids in the class. Some kids have much, much, much more than me, but there are plenty of kids who have much, much, much less than me. Why do I have to make people jealous?" Another woman told me that her child also learns in the school, and when the child gets a nice treat to take to school, she takes it out of the bag and she puts it in a regular plastic bag, because treats in their fancy, glossy packaging are much more tempting for a child who can't afford them. And when it's in a plastic bag, it doesn't look as tempting. All these things are no sin for all in Chaveiro. I'm not you, but I can think about you enough to know what might be hard for you, and I'll be sensitive to you. That's what Nosi Ba'ol means. We can't wait for Rachamim, because sometimes we're going to have Rachamim, and sometimes we won't. But you can always use Nosi Ba'ol, because anybody's situation, you can take a second to stop and think about what it feels like to be them. And this is very, very important. Okay. We're going to start winding down. Does somebody have a question? Anybody have a question here? Nope. Okay, feel free to ask if you do. I want to say that sometimes when we have rachamim to somebody, I said this before, you need to use Nosi Ba'ol in order to try to understand them better. When we're compassionate, we think we know exactly what another person wants, but we don't always know what we want. And we have to think about their experience and not mine. My husband was once in a group of men who were working together on the Mitzvah of Chesed with Rav Volba, who was a famous, one of the Musar leaders who was alive in Jerusalem. And Rav Volba said, "Before you do anything for anybody, think about 3 people a day who what their needs are. Don't even fill their needs, just think about what their needs are. This was a group of adult men, and Revolpa had a certain way that he would work on a certain exercise and he wouldn't move on to the next stage until everybody had mastered it. The men came back and they said, "We can't figure out what people's needs are." And one man said, "But I'm hungry. I want to hand everybody chocolate bars because I'm hungry. But maybe they're not hungry. And maybe this person needs advice. That person needs a compliment. That one needs a sweater because he's cold. And this one needs a chocolate bar." But being able to understand people's needs means to be able to wear their burden enough to try to understand them. So I want to tell you a very cute story that I had with my little son, who's 6 years old. And I have a lot of natural rachamim for this child. He's my youngest. So when he comes home crying about something, I don't have to cry. I just feel for him right away. Recently, he's shown a lot of resistance and anxiety around things like taking shots and going to the dentist. The teacher told me they had a shot in school in first grade. And the teacher said to me he's terrified. He put his head down and he pretended to be sleeping and he was shaking. And then I noticed a few weeks later, I took him to the dentist, totally, like having a hysterical fit about going to the dentist. So around a week later, when things had calmed down, I made him a little chart. And the chart had one column that said the situation. And I wrote the dentist. And in the other column, I wrote getting a shot, a vaccination. I made a little picture. Then in the next column, I wrote the emotion. What do you feel? And I wrote, I'm afraid. And I made a picture of the child who looks afraid. In the third column, I wrote, what can we do about it? And here I handed him the pencil, and I wanted him to think of solutions for his own problem. So I'm waiting for him to fill in, what can we do? He reads the chart that I wrote, and it goes like this. I said to him, "Steffi, what's wrong?" He said, "Mommy, you got it wrong." He said, "I'm not afraid. I'm embarrassed." And all of a sudden, it was like ding, ding, ding. This kid has a very high tolerance threshold. He doesn't feel pain. I was the type who used to faint when I'd get a shot. But he can handle a lot of pain. He is self-conscious in new situations and is afraid of his reactions. But I was so much in a rocking mode that I was feeling for him almost like an enmeshment. Like, oh, I know exactly how you feel, you're so scared. That was me at his age. I was a scared type. He's not scared, he's embarrassed. I was not using nosta ba'ol. If I would have put his burden on my back, I would have realized that I'm talking to a kid who has no fear of pain. He gets uncomfortable in situations where they're unpredictable. So here this was a child who I felt a lot for, but I wasn't doing nosta ba'ol, I was only doing rachamim. Oh, I feel so bad for you. And this is why this mida of nosta ba'ol is not only towards people who we don't feel natural on, it's even for people who we do feel natural on, because people don't all need what we need. People don't always feel the way we feel. And we assume we know exactly what they're going through. But they're different than us. And this is important to keep in mind. Okay. So I think we're going to wind down. And I think that this mida is one that we have to think, especially when you're together for the summer. There are people who are your type. There are people who are less your type. There are people who you feel natural chemistry with. You just feel like you get them and you understand them. And then there are those who don't. And nosta ba'ol is the mida that we use with people who are not naturally compassionate towards them. Because they also deserve for us to care about them. In fact, if there's somebody who you find annoying, part of your nosta ba'ol with them is maybe other people find them annoying also. And maybe they're a little offended that nobody really connects to them so well. Meaning, part of being nosta ba'ol is not just she's annoying, it's what does it feel like to be a person who people are annoyed by? that's not so much fun. Maybe it's hard for her that she keeps getting these like negative energy from people. And I can understand how that doesn't feel so good. Maybe some point in life I didn't feel so liked by somebody. And I know what that feels like. That's what it means to be no sipa'ol. To carry somebody else's burden on your back so that you can understand them. I'm going to give you a little exercise to do, and we're going to finish it today. I was thinking about this once, about somebody who I was having a hard time feeling compassionate towards them. So at first I started davening, which is always a good thing. But unfortunately, in today's world, sometimes we have feel lists from here till tomorrow. You could just say somebody's name and move on without feeling for them. So I did something one day which was interesting. Instead of davening for this person, I davened as if I was them. Meaning, I put their life on my back. What do they think about when they daven? Who are they davening for? What do they ask from Hashem and Shema Kolenu? What do they want? What are they thanking Hashem for in their prayer? The reason why I did this is because I naturally did not resonate with this person. But I needed to do this exercise of wearing their life in order to feel more of them. And it was very, very powerful. For a few minutes, I saw the world with their glasses. What they're diving for, what they're asking Hashem for. And it was very, very helpful for me. Because afterwards, I found that I had more of a sense of connection to them. Because I was thinking about life through their glasses, and that helped me feel more connected. So if there's anybody who you don't feel natural rational for, take a minute or two to put their burden on your back and feel like what it feels like to be them. And often as a result, we'll feel more connected and we'll understand people better. Thank you very much, everybody.